and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular audio podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, normalaudiostash.com. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. Welcome back to the Audio Stash today. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us at Normal to end marijuana prohibition in America. Just visit normal.org. First up today is our new weekly Audio Stash segment focusing on the different state legislative actions taking place regarding marijuana around the country. It's time now for Government at Work. Today, we're going to explore the New Mexico medical marijuana legislation that's due to break out of committee today, hopefully at the Santa Fe Roundhouse. In our Audio Stash legislative highlight today, New Mexico considers medical marijuana law. The Lynn and Aaron Compassionate Use Act was unanimously passed this legislative session by the New Mexico Senate Public Affairs Committee and now awaits approval from the Senate Judiciary Committee. SB 238 would authorize the use of medical marijuana by patients who have a doctor's recommendation. An overwhelming majority of state senators supported the bill last year by a vote of 36-4, but the bill timed out of the legislative session after being stalled in an obscure House subcommittee. Governor Bill Richardson said he would sign the bill if passed by the legislature. Normal is asking New Mexico residents to take action and show support for SB 238 this week by visiting the Take Action section of the Normal website, and we have links to it at normalaudiostash.com. Joining us to discuss the bill is Rena Sapansky, the director of Drug Policy Alliance in New Mexico, and really one of the most active drug policy reform advocates there in the land of enchantment. Rena, welcome back to the Audio Stash today.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
It's wonderful to speak with you again here on the program, Rena. Now, the Lynn and Aaron Compassionate Use Act, or New Mexico Senate Bill 238, is moving its way through committee again this week. It stalled and timed out of the legislative session last year, but not without a lot of support from the New Mexico politicians. Now, Rena, is it due to break out of those committees this year and head to the floor?
Oh, absolutely. We passed our first committee last week with a unanimous vote in the Senate Public Affairs. We have our next committee hearing this afternoon, so it's very exciting. And I think we'll have no problems getting out of the Senate. You know, last year we passed the Senate 34-6. And so, you know, when we get over to the House side, we'll see what the situation is. But I'm very optimistic this year.
And Rena, you've been really a very visible lobbyist there in New Mexico around the Roundhouse. And you, as well as Aaron, who the act is named after, have done a lot of just wonderful face-to-face interaction with these elected officials. Has that begun to pay off now, with the legislators having a good familiarity and comfort with this medical marijuana access legislation now?
Oh, absolutely. Our goal is to speak to every legislator multiple times until we know exactly where they stand. And at our last committee hearing last week, we walked in and sat down, and they said, well, you know, I think you've visited with every legislator on this committee several times. We're all familiar with this legislation. So in that sense, it's a little bit easier this year. We don't have to start from the ground up. We do have 11 new House members, though, this year, and so those are folks that we are educating already, even though we're not in the House side.
Yeah, last year I was living in New Mexico and covering this for public radio there locally, and they sent this medical marijuana legislation over to the House Water and Agricultural Resources Committee, where it stalled out. Rena, is there a chance that this bill could end up back in front of that very odd committee again this year?
Well, you know, you never know. You just never know, and we probably won't know until it gets introduced on the House side after we pass the Senate, which should be later this week or early next week. And so we're hoping for good committee assignments, but, you know, in some ways we just won't know.
Now, Rena, let's talk about the bill itself. Should the Lynn and Aaron Compassionate Use Act be made into state law, how would it change existing law, and what would patients have access to there?
Well, basically, patients whose medical providers felt that they would benefit from medical marijuana would fill out an application, receive an ID card. They would be allowed to possess the amount that would be necessary for a three-month course of treatment at any time, and they would be able to have a caregiver who would be involved in. And we're also calling for the state to license the production and the regulation of the distribution of medical marijuana. So this bill is a little bit far-reaching than other legislation in other states.
And how might the distribution aspect work there in New Mexico?
Well, you know, we're leaving it up to the Department of Health to promulgate rules. If the bill would pass, of course, we'll be involved as much as possible in that rulemaking. But, you know, there's been various ideas tossed around for a number of years. One is that one secure greenhouse in New Mexico would grow, and the Department of Health would take charge of the distribution, and that would be a very centralized operation. Other schemes involve licensing multiple producers, so it's hard to say, but we have really a lot of faith in the Department of Health that they'll do the right thing and create some regulations that will make the program really accessible for patients.
And just a reminder to our listeners, Democratic presidential hopeful and New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson said he would support this bill if it got to his desk.
Yes, he has said that. He said that the last 2 years. Last year he gave us a message, an executive message, to allow the bill to be heard. So we have every indication that he's continuing in his support for the bill.
We're with Rena Sapansky from Drug Policy Alliance of New Mexico. Rena, I know DPA is not focused solely on marijuana reform. What other legislation or projects is Drug Policy Alliance in New Mexico working on right now?
Yeah, we actually have five pieces of legislation. It's a very exciting session for us. We're looking at one of the most important bills, I think, is the Good Samaritan, the 911 Good Samaritan Act, basically to protect people at the scene of an overdose from arrest for drug possession, because we know the number one reason why people are not calling 911 is because they're afraid of arrest. So we're protecting them from drug possession charges. We have the highest overdose rate in the country, and so it's time to take things a step further. We've got great overdose programs, but we really need some legal protection for these folks as well. We have a treatment diversion bill that would divert first and second time nonviolent drug offenders into treatment instead of prison time. We have a women's prison pilot project that would provide treatment at the women's prison and follow the women for 2 years after release. And so it's really it's a really great agenda this year, very exciting. We're also working on a bill that would mandate Medicaid to cover substance abuse treatment. Right now, our state Medicaid program does not cover any treatment services, and so we feel that's a huge gap in the pay sources for treatment in this state. So
New Mexico has a number of factors at play into this, but somewhat because of the rural nature of the state, there really isn't much drug treatment available there.
Yeah, we actually have the lowest treatment availability in the country, and partly it's a rural issue. Partly it's just that we need to invest. We need to step up to the plate and put our money where our greatest issues are, and I think it's 9 out of our top 10 causes of death in New Mexico are related to substance abuse. So we're paying for it one way or another, and so why not be paying for it on the front end and investing in treatment and getting people the help that they need.
And New Mexico is also somewhat unique in that a majority of prisons and jails there are privately run. Rena, do you think it's tougher to work with these private prison corporations on these reforms than if they were state-run institutions?
Well, it does present some difficulties, but we, after 2 years of discussing this pilot project, we finally gotten buy-in from the Department of Corrections, the Department of Health, and I think if the bill passes, they're both ready to implement the project, which would be very, very exciting, one of the first in the country of its nature.
We're with Rena from the Drug Policy Alliance of New Mexico, SB 238, the Lynn and Aaron Compassionate Use Act for Medical Marijuana, is before the state legislature this week. Rena, how can New Mexico residents who are listening right now help out?
Well, they can call the members of the Judiciary Committee, and they can also call their own senator and their own representative, and they can find that by going to the New Mexico legislature website, putting in their zip code. We really need folks to reach out and make that personal connect with their legislator, particularly in the House. So, you know, I think we're very confident about the Senate, but we really need to reach out to our House members and educate them and let them know that their constituents really want this to pass.
We have links on our website, normalaudiostash.com. Rena, thank you for joining us here again today from the land of enchantment there.
It's always a pleasure to talk to you, Chris.
Rena Sapansky is the director of the Drug Policy Alliance office in New Mexico. We have links to them and the New Mexico State Legislature on our homepage at normalaudiostash.com. Today, we'll start up our interview series with businessman, author, and broadcast journalist David R. Ford. David's books include Marijuana, Not Guilty as Charged, and his newest is Good Medicine, Great Sex, How Marijuana Brought Me Creativity, Passion, and Prosperity. David R. Ford was a construction and real estate developer in Hawaii who brokered tens of millions of dollars in transactions. At the same time, David was a radio and television journalist, landing the coveted job of celebrity interviewer for the local CBS affiliate there in Hawaii. There, Dave interacted with the true legends of film and music throughout the 50s, 60s, and 70s. Dave is also a lifelong marijuana smoker who enjoyed marijuana recreationally for years and then used medicinal marijuana more extensively in his battle with cancer. Dave literally donates 100% of the proceeds from his books to the Normal Foundation in a large personal contribution to help end prohibition. You can find out more about Dave and his books at davidrford.com. We have links to it on our homepage as well. Today, we'll speak with Dave about his autobiographical book, Good Medicine, Great Sex, How Marijuana Brought Me Creativity, Passion, and Prosperity. Dave is in his 80s and has borne a personal eyewitness to the massive shifts in drug policy and marijuana prohibition. From the original reefer madness of the 1930s to the explorations of personal freedom in the 60s, on up to the passage of Prop 215 in 1996, and now the further reform movement, David has not just watched it on TV. He's been right there on the ground, in the middle of it, hands-on. It's a great privilege, and it gives me great pleasure to welcome David R. Ford to the Audio Stash today. Dave, thanks again for joining us here again.
Well, thank you, Chris. It's great to be with you.
Thank you, Dave. It really is wonderful to have you on the program today. In your book, Good Medicine, Great Sex, it's a detailed and incredibly honest account of your life. It's rare in an autobiography that we see such stark honesty about these intimate details, but Tell us why you wrote this book and also about some of your first experiences with marijuana.
We've had so many lies coming from the federal government, Chris, that I felt it was time to come out and tell the truth about marijuana, which is without a doubt the world's least harmful medicine, and high, of course. And consequently, I came out of the closet actually when I was 17 years old. I had my first experience with marijuana when I was 8 years old, when a young Hispanic youngster about my age came up and wanted to sell me on the streets of San Rafael some happy grass for my parents. I didn't know what it was. I said, well, you know, I'm not interested. My dad doesn't like to cut the grass, and I don't think he'd be interested in having any. And a man walked up to me, and he says, don't listen to that kid. That stuff is called marijuana, and it could cause you to kill your parents. And a shiver ran down my back, and an older man, like in his 50s, came up to me and said, don't listen to any of those things. That's a terrible, terrible, dangerous drug. And then I saw him sell some to another man who rolled a joint, smoked it, smiled, and I walked over and I said, that's dangerous stuff. You can't smoke it. You might kill somebody. And he says, don't listen to those things. Those are just lies. He says, compared to alcohol, you don't puke on your shoes. You have fun. You don't hurt anybody. And it's wonderful stuff. And plus, it's medicine. And even at that early age, I decided to learn more about it. When I was 17, I had my own radio show called Junior Jamboree. It was a live audience radio show broadcast from KTIM in San Rafael, California. And I would ask kids what they felt other kids or what they'd heard other kids were using in the way of drugs. And usually in those days, it was just pot or alcohol. I was told that the alcohol, kids that used alcohol were involved in date rape. They'd be involved with fights at football games and basketball games, and the pot smokers attacked French fries. So I became very interested, and I've spent over 60 years now exposing government lies, and it's been a great educational adventure for me. It's just been a great ride, Chris.
And Dave, you are also probably in the best locations for cannabis in the United States, Hawaii and California. So being in those environments helped, I'm sure, as well with this education in marijuana.
Definitely. Absolutely. And just an example, in just the last year, the assistant chief of police in Hawaii mentioned that Hawaii today has the highest methamphetamine use of any state in the United States. And until Bush Reagan came in 1980, Chris, pot was de facto legalized. I mean, there was just nothing to it. Police officers would come by when we're at the beach and just give us what they'd call the shock, you know, put your hand up and just kind of wave with your thumb and little finger out, meaning take it easy, everything's okay, be cool, and everything's okay. And when Bush Reagan came in, it was really horrible. They were poisoning all the pot. Helicopters were flying as low as 50 feet over houses. And sadly, people started using hard drugs. I mean, it was like Nixon in Vietnam. When he heard that the soldiers were using marijuana, he wanted to make us, he started urine testing. Until finally he was successful and he got the soldiers to stop using marijuana. They just switched to heroin. You know, I mean, we've got to get the education out there, and that's been my life's work, as well as having some very interesting jobs that have been created through the creativity of marijuana. And incidentally, I'm also a cancer survivor, so I'm very much aware of the medical value of cannabis. And I have, as you probably know, in reading Good Medicine, Great Sex, there are literally hundreds of stories, some that'll cause you to cry and many of them that'll hopefully cause you to laugh. But between stories that ultimately tear at your heart and leave you helpless with laughter, I try to use evidence that's been gathered over a lifetime to shred anti-marijuana propaganda.
We're with author and activist David R. Ford, speaking about his newest book, Good Medicine, Great Sex. Dave, in looking at all of this history, you're based there in California now. Are you seeing a big shift today in attitudes towards marijuana right now as compared to the past, even with folks out there who aren't necessarily involved with dispensaries or medical access?
Absolutely. When I first wrote Marijuana, Not Guilty as Charged, my hardback book, I have been in the 4th of July parade since 1997. And I'd have a convertible all decorated with pictures of the book and kids don't use pot, it's medicine and such things as that. And I would be on the sitting on the back of the convertible. And there are like 15 to 20,000 people that come from the San Francisco Bay Area to watch our annual parade. And the first time I went through, there was just no applause. I mean, people were thinking, my God, this guy is promoting marijuana. And as the years passed, I wouldn't give up. And this, the last time I was in the parade, and preceding years to that, by the second year, there was a little bit of applause. The last time I was in the parade, when it would stop for a few moments, people would come up and shake my hands, and some of these people in their 70s and 80s, and they'd say, God bless you, son, keep it up. And being their age, I had to laugh. it's wonderful to see how the change has gone for the good. And, we're working. We are going to have it legalized nationally as medicine and also recreationally. There's no question. It's just a matter of time, Chris.
Dave, in your book, you detail this incredible adventure that has been your life, an adventure that continues on. But as such a creative individual, you attribute a lot of your creative inspirations to smoking pot. And you also point out that really the most creative individuals in our American society are usually also marijuana smokers as well, whether they admit it publicly or not. So tell us about when you first started to realize that being creative and smoking pot wasn't just a personal experience, but one that was more widely shared.
Well, interacting with other people, I just found out that more people than you'd ever realize, including many doctors that I have talked to, and police officers and judges. I used to have a judge and police officers that smoked pot at my home. When I lived in Hawaii for 30 years. I worked for the CBS television affiliate as a TV personality and a journalist. And consequently, people felt pretty safe with me. And they would come over to my home and smoke pot in the morning. In the afternoon, they would arrest people and send them to jail. And I said, how could you be so hypocritical? And they said, it's our job, Dave. We just have to, we have to follow the law, even though we know that it's wrong. And I said, we've got to change the law. That's the bottom line. And, just everyone that I met, I try to educate. And I think by writing books, it's a wonderful way to do that because you have reference notes where people could debate anyone, any prohibitionist. I try to put in enough arguments where we'll cover anything, any of the objections that you hear, like marijuana has been proven scientifically that it has no medical value, that it's highly addictive, that it's a gateway drug, that it kills your brain cells, it causes a motivational syndrome, it impairs memory for the rest of your life. Marijuana causes psychological impairment. Marijuana causes crime. Marijuana interferes with male and female sex hormones, on and on. And I make it a point in my books to counteract all of these with scientific evidence using such authorities as the National Academy of Sciences and other outstanding reference notes. So anyone that reads my books not only will be entertained because I write them like a novel, but they're very factual. Reference notes will enable people to argue and beat any argument. You could debate anyone if you finish reading my books. And Good Medicine, Great Sex, my last book, as you probably know because you're outstanding in reading a book before you interview someone on it, is 486 pages with 79 photos. I've had people tell me they stayed up all night reading the book. And I was a little concerned when I wrote it because I do have a lot of sex in it. In the book, it gives the reasons why. I mean, there's a lot of experiences I've had that prove with nurses and so on that I